All right, why don't we go ahead and get started with Solid Waste Advisory Committee meeting. Thanks, everyone, for being here. I'm hopeful that Armando will make it this morning as well. We do have a quorum, so we can proceed with the meeting. First agenda item is comments from the chair and committee members. Just a couple things on my side. First, I wanted to once again mention something that I believe Roy Brower mentioned at the last meeting, which is that council will be considering a small change to the name of this committee on July 17th and July 24th. It's an ordinance change. The change would be to go from the current name to the Solid Waste Alternatives Advisory Committee, to just add a little clarity that reflects the mission of this group. That mission statement, that purpose statement, is at the top of your agendas. So that'll proceed shortly. Second item, I want to ask Ken Ray of Metro to talk about upcoming events in the Let's Talk Trash series.
My last chance to promote this. Hopefully most of you received information about the visit by Edward Humes, who is the author of Garbology. He will be in Portland this week for two events, one tomorrow night at Portland State University at Hoffman Hall. We're doing an event with the PSU's Institute for Sustainable Solutions. It'll be a free talk. He'll be here from 7 to about 9 p.m. tomorrow night, talking about our 102-ton average lifetime trash legacy, its impacts on our communities, and ways that we can address that. He'll be giving a similar talk at the City Club of Portland's Friday Forum this Friday. Doors open at 11:30 at the Sentinel Hotel, which used to be known as the Governor Hotel, downtown on 11th Avenue. If you are planning to go to the City Club lunch, you will need to, and you haven't made lunch reservations yet, you'll need to do so by 5 o'clock today. You can do that on the City Club's website. I have cards at the back table with some more information on both events. I hope you can be there. I hope your colleagues, friends, neighbors, and others can also attend. I think there'll be some very, very interesting discussions about our garbage and what we can do with it.
Thanks, Ken. Any comments from members unrelated to agenda items? Susan.
I just wanted to share with the group that I'll be leaving the committee, so I'm leaving my position of speed like as we go. So here to enjoy the last meeting. Some comments. So it's been great working with the committee.
We'll be very sorry.
What's up?
I'm stuck in here. Spending a little time with my kids over the summer and then figuring out additional options in the sustainable planning and community development world. So you might be hearing from me.
Well, Susan, I'm happy for you. It'll be a loss to this committee and the region. I already asked Susan to get me her resume when she's ready for that, so yeah, it might be broadcast broadly. Widely. All right, great. Let's move on to consideration of the minutes from our June meeting. You should have received those a little over a week ago. Any amendments to those minutes? Could I get a motion to approve? From a member?
Motion to approve.
Second? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great, thank you. All right, let's move on to the main topic for today's meeting. It's a continuation of the discussion you had last month. Last month was really a setup, a foundation for this discussion to talk about the roadmap project that's looking at food scraps processing capacity. As I listened to the tape recording from last month, I heard Mr. Winterhalter point out that it was probably a world record SWAC meeting and that I should be sure to know how efficient you guys were. And that I'll do credit to Mr. Anger down there as well. I think this one will take a little bit more time, and we're looking forward to a good discussion. So with that, let me pass it over to Jennifer to start us out.
I'll wait till I have something visual. Oh. Thank you. Okay, so today...
Can I say one thing? I don't think I've had the chance to introduce Mary Beth Kaliski, which she does not appreciate, but I'll do nevertheless. who's helping us out in her usual fantastic fashion.
So today is part two of the food scraps processing capacity project discussion. And in today's meeting, I'm going to do a really quick project review to refresh you from our discussion last time, or lack of discussion last time, and my just talking last time. And for those of you who weren't here, so you kind of get up to speed a little bit. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about the alternatives analysis process that we're going through right now. Next, we'll talk a little bit about the draft alternatives that we've developed to date and solicit your feedback. And like I said, solicit your feedback from you on some of the draft alternatives that we have developed to date. I also wanted to introduce Lindsay Lopez, who's in the audience. She is the project manager for CH2M Hill, who is assisting us in this work. So a quick review. This project is part of the overall solid waste roadmap project that's going on, and it attempts to answer this question, which is what actions should Metro take to ensure adequate and approximate capacity to transfer and process food scraps collected from the region's businesses and residents. As you very likely know, this is just one element of a much larger roadmap project. So specific to this project, the purpose is to develop a number of alternatives for increasing food scraps processing capacity that we will provide to Council for consideration in the fall. So how are we going about doing this? We are using an alternatives analysis process very similar to the other roadmap projects that you have seen and heard about before. The three in italics are the ones that we are have either completed or are in the midst of working on. I'm going to be talking about the first two today. And keep in mind that these steps aren't necessarily linear. As we move forward, we will likely circle back, amend earlier steps based on what we learn, and some steps are done simultaneously. This is a kind of another way of looking at it for those of you who like a little bit more of a graphic representation. So as you can see, when we take our draft alternatives, there's a lot of kind of back and forth evaluation before we have any proposed alternatives. So we're kind of in the green box right now. So step one in this process is to establish objectives. And another way to think about this is the criteria by which we rate or rank the alternatives. And these are the fundamental issues that must be met as part of our decision to move forward. So what are the objectives and the criteria that we have developed to date? These should look somewhat familiar to you, as they are extremely similar to the public benefits developed for the overall solid waste roadmap project that all of our projects are seeking to meet. I'm going to read the ones from the solid waste roadmap, and you can see how they're pretty well aligned. So we want to protect people's health, protect the environment, get good value for the public's money, keep the commitment to highest and best use of materials, be adaptive and responsive, and ensure that our services are available for all types of customers. The project purpose statement, which I showed you previously, and the objectives slash criteria are the two key elements that help us develop the alternatives, which is step two in the process. So I didn't have room on the slides to write preliminary for each one. So always put the word preliminary before everything I tell you today. And keep in mind that although these are grouped into five alternatives right now, there may be additional ones that are variations of these that may fall between each, or that one variable is changed and it may change an alternative, or there might be a hybrid alternative that's developed over time. So each one will be introduced based on the specific actions that Metro and others would take to increase capacity. The alternatives are very high level at this point in the process, so we're looking at kind of the what right now and not the how. A lot of the how questions have yet to be addressed. And again, we haven't evaluated any of these alternatives against the criteria as of yet. We're still early in the process. So as presented, the alternatives are primarily focused on commercial food scraps at this point. When we discuss them at the end of the presentation, I'll be asking you to think about how all of these alternatives and your perspectives on them would change if residential food scraps is added. And residential food scraps are a part of this project, but this presentation in this early stage, we're focusing on commercial right now. Does anybody have any questions so far about the process or where we are?
Maybe no? I can just give a look ahead. At the end, we're going to, similar to the presentation that Rob Smoot and Tom Chamoff gave, we're going to ask you to give your thoughts on four questions. We'll give those to you, but just if it's helpful to start thinking about them ahead of time, just kind of thoughts on the alternatives themselves, any alternatives that you would like to add that come to mind, or refinements to what's there, red flags, and then the last thing Jennifer said is, if we added residential into this, what would that do to that alternative?
And there are post-its and markers, so if something comes to mind during the presentation, feel free to scribble it down. I would just ask that you put the question number on that post-it so that we can keep track of what your comment referred to, and then we'll talk through them later on. So just to give you an idea of the baseline, where we are today, JC Biomethane and PRC take the majority of the region's commercial food scraps right now. The system elements, the collection, transfer, processing, operate relatively independently according to existing rules and regulations. There's little capacity for growth within proximate distance to the region. And collection programs right now are voluntary. So this is just to give you an idea of where we are today. So how I'm going to introduce each alternative is I will start with this little box at the top that really defines the expected actions and the roles of each player would play in this, and then get into the high-level characteristics of what each alternative would look like. So the status quo assumes that Metro exerts no additional influence on the system aside from continuing to be a system participant through continued transfer station operation and regulation. This alternative reflects slow system evolution, relying primarily on private sector decisions to move forward with development of any new processing capacity based on market conditions. The system is not highly coordinated and not necessarily highly efficient. So that is pretty much the status quo. That is an alternative for us to pretty much just leave things as they are. Alternative two, a food scraps disposal ban. Now, the primary component of this alternative is the introduction of a food scraps disposal ban. This will also be a part of all the subsequent alternatives that I review today. Throughout the presentation, I'm referring to a disposal ban in more of a generic sense. I want to be clear that I'm stating it as the what. In other words, the region's commercially generated food scraps will not be allowed to be directly landfilled. The mechanism or mechanisms for implementation, or the how, including where in the process enforcement would occur yet, is yet to be determined and analyzed and can take many different forms. So try not to think about the how yet at this point. And as a reminder, in 2011, SWAC identified a commercial food scraps disposal ban as a policy option recommendation to the Metro Council. So alternative two has Metro influencing the system through the passage of a commercial food scraps ban only. This alternative envisions a system where government sets the stage for more predictable material flow, but is hands-off when it comes to building processing capacity. So it assumes that the ban would have the desired effect of motivating the private sector to expand capacity. So the key elements here is that the disposal ban would provide some degree of material flow predictability, that local governments would continue to coordinate collection for affected businesses as they see fit, Metro and private sector would continue to manage transfer as we do now, and private sector would develop the capacity to manage all of the processing capacity without any additional intervention. Alternative three includes flow control and contracting. In this alternative, Metro would pass the ban. Then we would require that all commercial food scraps would have to come to Metro transfer stations, and Metro would issue an RFP for processing that could be awarded to one or more multiple processors. The requirement for use of Metro's transfer stations may be temporary and tied to the length of any contracts in this alternative. The duration of that requirement is part of the how. The alternative assumes that Metro may not want to or be able to accept residential food or yard debris loads at its stations because of capacity issues. Therefore, the system would rely on private transfer facilities to manage some or all of the residential food scraps. The possible split between commercial and residential in this alternative is dictated more by available transfer capacity at Metro facilities and not by processing method. Alternative 4 is that Metro builds a facility. This alternative, Metro takes the most active role in capacity development and focuses on a publicly owned recovery system with flow control. So pretty much Metro would find a piece of property, build a publicly owned processing facility, collection programs would be required in order to feed that facility, and Metro would require all commercial food scraps to come to Metro Central, Metro South, or go directly to its processing facility over a longer term. Alternative 5, wastewater treatment. In this alternative, instead of Metro building a new processing infrastructure, intergovernmental agreements are negotiated with one or more existing wastewater treatment plants that serve the region, have excess capacity, and are interested in procuring food scraps in their process. The flow control that would likely be exerted on commercial food scraps requiring delivery to Metro transfer stations or direct delivery to the wastewater treatment plant would be implemented to ensure feedstock quality as well as provide a steady and predictable flow of materials, which can be important to a treatment facility. In addition, because of transfer issues, as I mentioned in the previous slide, residential stream, all aspects, would likely be managed by private facilities due to the fact that wastewater treatment plants, A, don't want yard waste, and B, capacity issues at the transfer facilities if we were to require all material come through Metro transfer facilities. Okay. That was kind of quick through those. So I have some handouts here, and I'll pass these around. And these are pretty much the slides with the alternatives on them. So you can look at them a little bit more closely and think about them.
And so before we go to these questions, take a minute to, if necessary, to look at these and just, are there any clarification questions you have about the meaning of those alternatives? We'll get into the merits as we go through this, but if you'd like Jennifer to clarify anything, please do so. Bruce?
On number 5, when you talk about wastewater treatment, you talk about material quality. Are you talking about a dedicated digester at those? Or, I mean, is it wide open or a dedicated one, or is it mixing it with sewage?
I think it's wide open at this point because some facilities have the capacity and the ability to dedicate or the desire to dedicate a digester, and some may just want to add it to a current system to generate more power for, you know, to generate more gas or what have you. So that's part of the how.
Leslie?
I'm assuming that there might be consideration of some kind of hybrid combining two or three of these alternatives.
Absolutely. As I said in the beginning, this is really preliminary, and that there could be hybrids, there could be nuances, there could be shifts. So, you know, and if you do have some ideas on that, please.
Yeah, that's really what our intent with number 2 is, yeah. Is if you see there's a clear 3B, you know, option in your mind or a variation, yeah, please propose that. Mm-hmm. Please say that, as well as any that are completely missing. Okay, so let's take a number of minutes for you folks to think about these questions and jot one down per post-it, and then we'll gather them up, we'll assign them to the areas, and we'll talk through them then. Is this exercise clear? We're going to get to the input phase, and we just want to take the opportunity to use the post-its to actually see and record those thoughts, then we'll talk through them. You can do, these are guides. You can respond to one or all of them, whatever makes sense.
I might have missed this from the last meeting, but can you define approximate
where are you kind of scope that?
You know, within the metro boundaries or just outside. I realize that's still a little fuzzy. Proximate would not mean Royal Compost in
or
eastern
J.C.
Washington.
It's not proximate.
It's on the edge, right?
Well, to follow that up, question, this is a question. We had a landfill issue 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And the ultimate choice, based on economics, political reality, and feasibility, was to put them up the gorge. And it makes a lot of sense if there was a rainfall or anything else. Why are you excluding anything within a 100-mile radius of this?
We're not excluding it. It's just the thoughts behind the original scoping was that there can be some value in managing our material closer to us, but clearly that hasn't guided every decision we've made, and it won't ultimately exclude something either.
I just think it's going to be a really tough site, something within 20 miles of downtown Portland, based on the current history and the feelings with facilities that have been tried.
We agree.
Yeah,
we totally agree. So don't consider the reasonably proximate a hard limiter here. It's really a, if possible, that would be desirable. Members of the audience, we'll have the usual opportunity for public comment at the end of the meeting. If this structure of questions is helpful to you in framing your comments, it would be helpful to us to get them in that way. But you don't need to feel limited by that.
And here it would be helpful if we could actually see some things that you folks are writing.
So
I tried to write them down as fast as I could and almost got to.
So when we get back to the when we get to the public comment period, we'll go through the alternatives once again to let you see that.
Yeah.
As you finish a post-it, if you just pull it off your pack and put it next to you, and I'll come by and grab them as you go. We'd still have all the code required, regulatory oversight over facilities in the region, and the transfer of pretrustable material outside of the region, if that's what you're saying.
In terms of program consistency from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, small and tall, central can still ensure there's consistency in terms of what's allowed in the collection.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only hesitating because we don't actually have regional requirements for what's in local government collection programs. You know, Metro has some requirements that we've talked about what can go to Metro's transfer stations, and then you all as the local governments, we work with to try and align those. We continue to have that interest. Whether that would ultimately go beyond to, say, setting those elements in a regional service standard, we haven't even thought about. But would still have that interest in having it.
Thank you.
a couple pens scribbling. Wait a minute, and then we'll get going. You can continue to add ideas as we go forth. Okay, thanks everybody.
Any last ones?
So I'm going to pull these off. We'll start looking at them. If it's really clear, give an opportunity for others to comment. If we want a little bit of elaboration on what it means, I'll ask the person who wrote it. And who remembers that he wrote it, to elaborate on that. This is great. The first one is a question, and I'll just try and answer this one straight out. Has the Metro Council determined that energy production is the highest and best use for food waste? The Metro Council has not determined that. It's an interesting question in terms of the hierarchy. Ultimately, we'll probably need to have some clarity on that as we weigh options against each other. To help us get some clarity, some of you may be aware that DEQ and Metro have partnered on a research project that DEQ is leading that's looking at the relative life cycle impacts and benefits of different management technologies for food waste. I believe the timeline for completion of that report is towards the end of the summer, so that should be useful information for us to have. Why do the alternatives, some of the alternatives have the use only of the Metro transfer stations for transfer? Privates are also available, and private transfer stations have capacity. The reason that those show up in some of those alternatives is because the alternatives are assuming a need to be able to get enough flow to a processing facility to make that processing facility feasible, whether we contract for it or whether we build it. And Marv, get ready to elbow me if I say something wrong, but it really relates to laws relating to flow control, and the cleanest and best way for us to exert flow control is to direct material to our own facilities. Is that okay, Marv?
Doing great.
Okay. And I'm going to stop there. But that's the basic reasoning for that. Okay, I'm going to ask the writer of this to elaborate a little. This says, for alternative two, there's no guarantee of new capacity with the ban. Can someone elaborate on that?
Yeah, I put that in because I think that's the one fall in the straight ban with nothing else. There's no guarantee that we ban it from the landfill that there'll either be enough waste or a way to gather enough waste together to make it feasible for somebody to invest the money that they haven't already decided to invest.
Anybody else have any thoughts on what Paul just said?
I think I put it under the red flag. Is this chicken and eggs scenario?
That's what that means? Okay.
I had a similar... My comment was that a ban would help stimulate development capacity, but it would have to go hand in hand with helping local governments gear up, you know, to work with businesses and to help develop the infrastructure. And it kind of goes back to the earlier meetings we had specifically on developing a system for handling food waste, where that was part of the discussion around the ban, that it... In fact, there's language saying Metro will consider a ban in this year if that capacity hasn't been developed.
Right.
But it considers all of that, so I think that's critical.
So thought on alternative two, provides necessary material flows to build incentives, allows for private sector development of processing capacity. Okay, so it's a little different angle on that it has a little bit more power to it. Anybody want to elaborate on that?
I think that's fine.
Yeah, please.
So it allows for, does not guarantee, but it allows for.
Okay, alternative one relies on voluntary participation, almost impossible to create incentives for participation. It's also no economy of scale, limited efficiencies, and overall then you get low participation. So that's the status quo alternative. Any comments, elaboration either from the author or other comments regarding alternative one?
That was also mine. That's just what we've sort of learned from our five. Voluntary, which is very little participation, very little meaningful participation, except from very early adopters. But to make it really mainstream, there has to be more of an economy of scale and some efficiency built in, but there's very little incentive for business to participate.
Thank you. Also on alternative one, unstable, and we've got limited available capacity.
No room for growth.
Need understanding of potential capacity opportunities, GHG emissions impacts, and other environmental impacts, and community receptivity to each to evaluate the potential. So those are really good comments for us because they speak to the criteria. We didn't spend a lot of time on the criteria, as Jennifer said. If we can bring those up again, we can do that. They both parallel and mirror the overall public benefits that we want to achieve through any of these roadmap projects. And those, we have to get to those. To what this person said, we have to get to those through the application of the criteria, which we haven't done. And it may be that some would simply fall off at that point as they're applied. And I think Mike's comment earlier goes a lot to that community receptivity comment in this one. The reality in our region is that would be, as Mike said, difficult to get. For alternatives 2 through 5, disposal ban phased in to allow for infrastructure development and local government programs is critical to I can't read part of it. Critical to ensuring predictable tonnage. So we need the ban. The ban's critical and a phased in element. Did I characterize that?
Yeah, that's one part of it.
Okay. If we're requesting all commercial to go to Metro transfer stations, how will that affect impact capacity at those facilities for other materials already there? Metro South already has a limited footprint. What could that, essentially, what kind of throughput could that facility really handle? So that, appreciate the point, and I appreciate the linkage that you guys are making between projects, and that's what we've got to do in running these projects. So you may remember the discussion about Metro South with Paul and with Chuck Geyer, and part of the things going into the planning for that facility are trying to estimate, evaluate, prioritize what kind of flows at that facility would we want to handle in the future. That facility has very limited or no capacity under current conditions to handle some of these scenarios. If we want to go down this path, then we need to intersect with the Metro South project. Metro Central, Paul, step in. Metro Central has a little more flexibility, a little more capacity, but there's implications either way, and then those become some of the things we've got to look at through the application of the different criteria. Nothing easy about this. Paul, do you want to elaborate at all?
Well, I think you've got it pretty well. Metro Central, we probably don't have a tonnage limitation at Metro Central with respect to what we can take right now. We can handle a lot. The transfer stations are not just there because of how much tonnage they can handle. They're there so that the collection tonnage won't have to go so far. It's a trade-off. South, we're out of capacity right now with respect to organics.
I'm going to need a little help with this one. Green. adding organics to required collection system. Does that sound familiar? I want to make sure I'm reading this right. Does this look familiar to anybody's handwriting?
Handwriting analysis experts.
So adding organics to the regional collection system, can you elaborate on that, Mike?
Well, instead of a disposal ban, it might make sense to add it to the principal recycling list for the region so that the collection systems could then accept it. The cities could figure out, the counties could figure out how to add it, what the rate impact would be, as long as there's capacity to take the material. Because the collection industry will always collect whatever they need to, as long as there's a place to unload the trucks when they're done.
Got it.
So Mike, are you saying added is a material that should be collected if there's a market for it? Like,
as long as there's a process, we could add it. You know, cardboard, wood, and other materials that are currently taken.
Mirrors more kind of approach we've tried to take. Okay, that's great. And then Mike also calls out a key part of the how that we'd have to address as we go down, which is with disposal bans, whatever fashion they take. Where's enforcement? Who's responsible for it? That's obviously a big thing to be determined. Some of you are aware of some other jurisdictions around North America that take different approaches. But that's a huge, huge how on this. Alternative one, not acceptable. To meet existing and future recovery goals. Food is a critical material to address, and programs are unlikely to be robust enough under this alternative. I think we've heard that sentiment a couple times now. Okay, alternative four. So if Metro does this alternative, then the public is on the hook for the cost. And versus a private facility does not risk ratepayer money. Yeah. Any comments, either elaboration from the author or comments on that one? Questions? Okay. Important consideration. And one that I would anticipate our council wanting to talk quite a bit about if this move forward. Also an alternative for thought, an observation that Metro was not created to go into business. For many reasons, I think either alternative 3 or alternative 5, not both. Could the author elaborate on the not both part?
Yeah, just worry about if you have too many options for processing, you're going to lose the, lose that consolidated tonnage. And to keep costs down, you've got to consolidate the tonnage.
Regarding alternative 5, kind of a reality check here, that there's only probably only a small number of wastewater treatment plants that could accept this material. Gresham, for example, Durham, for example. So I think, Dan, I think this is yours too. Is that yours? No? It's Amy's. You want to elaborate on that?
Just that, there's probably not a lot of facilities around the country that have any kind of intake facility to accept that food waste. And those that do have some kind of intake facility, the highest generating energy that goes into a digester is from the fat soils and grease, which they are quite good at collecting, and food waste is lower down. I'm saying they're against it, but it's not highly soft.
So that's a bit of a reality check, and maybe starts to cross over with some of the concerns expressed about alternative 4, that if we really wanted alternative 5 to be an option, Metro might have to make some investments if plants were amenable to it for additional digesters.
I believe Gresham's plant was open to accepting food waste in addition to
I think Gresham would have to add a digester, which is, don't quote me, a $10 million investment to build one like they built before. Okay. Or maybe $4 million. Okay. There's a lot of money.
A lot of zeros. Okay, I'm going to move on to these comments about additional alternatives or refinements to existing. So this one says some kind of hybrid of 2, 3, and 5. Jen, could you just touch?
Okay.
5 is wastewater treatment. 3 is flow control and contracting. And 2 is a straight band. Could the author elaborate on what their thoughts are on that hybrid, Leslie?
Yeah, I pulled those 3 out because they seemed like somewhat different options, but I think that has to be considered along with the environmental impacts, probably all of those other factors that we're going to have to look at for each of these alternatives. So really my suggestion is consider a hybrid out of at least 2 through 5, and what else is maybe most likely.
Any other comments on that? Dan had made a comment earlier that a risk of a hybrid that has at least 2 different types of markets might dilute it. Leslie's given another perspective. Any other thoughts?
The only thing I add to it is that there really is different requirements for the feedstocks going into those different types of facilities. And I think it just will require more investment in the whole system. And it'd be a lot cleaner to decide what we think is highest and best use in terms of processing and what that material be used for, and then make investments in that as opposed to, distributing it across a lot of different options.
Thank you.
This says, for alternative five, it says, for energy recovery improvements at wastewater treatment plants. What does that mean?
I was just thinking that if there is an idea with the wastewater treatment plant, they're not sending it to a digester and then off-gassing it, so it's more like looking at the long-term environmental impacts.
Okay.
So that's the option.
Gotcha. Consider longer distance haul options along with more local option. Consider the emissions associated with that, et cetera. So I think that goes to Mike's comment earlier, is don't limit ourselves by that proximate consideration.
Any thoughts on possible transition in collection to wet-dry and the implications that might have on infrastructure needs?
Can the author elaborate on that?
No, that's fine. Some of the work that I've been doing, there's been a lot of discussion about the West Coast transition to wet-dry collection and whether or not that's something that Portland might anticipate coming down the line, and if, you know, just looking at different collection alternatives that might
improve. Yeah, so this is all about, we're talking about source-separated food waste, and Amy's saying, what if we actually had a San Jose-style wet-dry system, which has different implications for a lot of things, collection and processing at a minimum. We have not explicitly thought about that in this project. There are some of those considerations going on in the long-term options element of the roadmap, and I think you're raising a good reminder about the intersection of those two. Any questions or comments about the wet-dry notion? One of the things I kind of noted by its absence in what we presented and in what you guys added were some of the things that we collectively tried to do in the earlier years of the organics development program. Some of you may remember that Metro and the City of Portland put $1 million on the table. Some of you may have thought about, I'm trying to think of there other areas of Metro where Metro may have helped finance a private development in a different way than grants like were put on the table before, or backstopped loans or things like that. I'm not suggesting it to be there, but I'm just noting by its absence.
It's because it's part of the how.
Well, I don't think we have an alternative that
really
that
just focuses just on financing.
Metro via, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You still sitting on that money, Bruce? from a decade ago?
No.
All right, red flags. Back to Mike's comment. Siting within the region is a significant barrier to alternative four. For sure. And siting's is challenging, the things you guys know already, just challenging almost anywhere in the state. All right, regarding alternative four, Metro Builds facility, how would that funding come about?
private industry opposition to this would be strong, and there'd be enormous opposition to siting the facility. The funding is a how. I can't answer that. And then I think the others are seem to be good points, but it would be I'd be interested in hearing from anybody to elaborate on the private industry opposition. I'm reading it as self-evident, but are there any nuances there that we should know about? You can also get those in public comment as well. Red flags, contamination by non-food items. That's going to be, and Amy, this might be yours again.
It is.
I just have a thing with your handwriting.
No, I have really bad handwriting.
You don't. Mine's worse, but I can read mine. Sometimes.
It's an issue that we've raised numerous times elsewhere is the front of the house recycling collection or composting collection is how would you manage that? I guess just kind of looking, I guess that's probably a little bit more how, but I think it kind of gets to a red flag of some of the challenges with increasing collection and requiring a ban of material. How to enforce, how to, it's how.
Yeah, but it's a good point. I mean, if we're going to get more food into the system through a ban, that is going to be a very real consideration. And one of the things that will come later that you speak to, and looking at the alternatives more deeply, is what are there any unique considerations for a specific alternative that tie back to feedstock? I think Amy's and Dan mentioned a couple regarding wastewater treatment plants. You know, there may be some different considerations we have. Non-food items is part of that. There may be other components too. So that's a pretty key consideration. All right. Would disposal ban be a central landfill ban or a required recycling style rule similar to the business recycling requirement? We don't know yet. That speaks to Jennifer's question of, let's just think of it generally for now. I think we absolutely would have to go into those different considerations later. This also comments that a BRRRR style, a business recycling requirement style ban would be much more difficult. Can the person who wrote that elaborate on that observation?
I would see it just as difficulty in that getting the BRRRR style was getting the 27 global governments in the region to adopt that as required recycling. And although I think there is openness to recycling organics to get cities and counties across the region to require food recycling might be more difficult. Just politically. Had that central landfill ban, if that is an option, might, if that's legally feasible, might be easier if there was a ban necessary.
Comments, observations on that one? Bruce?
The city of Portland already has in place a ban of, requirement that large food generating businesses participate. We haven't enforced or put the hammer down on that, if you will, because of the capacity issues, really the range of issues we're talking about here today. So I said my initial thought was a BRRRR approach might be a logical one since we've already done that successfully in the region. And the disposal ban has some other kind of challenges to it. How do you really work with the ban? Is it more just a directive and really try to get people on board, or is it really a ban that you're enforcing? So, but hearing Scott's comments, I'd be very open to having a discussion because it might move the whole region and not put it on having to go out to each of the local governments for that type of approval. And there's much more discussion whether it's ban or mandatory requirement. Either way, it's going to be challenging, and there needs to be a lot more work, obviously, that we're in the midst of, but also ready to ramp up a lot more. So you've asked for comments, and it's one that's thinking about things, but my initial reaction was BRR would maybe be better than disposal ban, but I see the approach you're bringing up here. And Scott's pointing out that might be more straightforward and a way to move it more quickly through the region.
I would agree with Scott's idea as well. So the ban is much, it's a much faster track than the BRR route. And I just know from working with some local jurisdictions that's a very tall order to pass a food ban or a food diversion requirement, probably in our jurisdiction at least, but a disposal ban, there's just nowhere to take it. You can't take it to that transfer facility, so that's an easier message to convey.
Just one other consideration. I don't want to start with a weaker recommendation, but it might be more hitting in terms of capacity and political acceptability, and that's looking at the largest food generators, whether it's a BRR-type initiative or a landfill ban. So that might be a discussion within all, a different discussion than all food waste for those reasons.
It's a very worthy discussion to look at both options. A BRR-type approach potentially runs the risk of sort of being a proxy for other things that are going on in the region. Horse trading.
Right. It's never in a vacuum.
Yes. So exactly that was what happened with Washington County.
To Leslie's comment, I get trying to just go to large generators, but I don't see how you do that on the ban side. Maybe big food or
right. It might be really
hard.
Not the same to picking stuff up.
Continuing on the red flags, I think this might be Amy Peppers and Amy Oskey to elaborate a little. Mixing food scraps with sewage is a big problem for final disposition of solids. Is this yours? No? Bruce?
Mine.
All right. Please.
So you've now got the food scrap. Say we take it to JC Biomethane and it comes out as a digestate that can be mixed in at a compost facility. If you mix it with sewage, it's a totally different issue, obviously, in terms of disposition of that material.
What's allowed by state?
Right, and the challenges of where that could be either taken for land application or other disposition. And I have strong reservations about any mixing with sewage. If there was a separate digester at a treatment facility, I would think that would be a reasonable option. Having spoken to our Portland facility, I just think the costs and challenges with maintaining separate nature would be substantial. And I'm understating. So,
this is bringing up as a red flag the capacity issues at Metro transfer stations again as a
as a red flag. And we've got multiple alternatives that are relying on that. So that problem that was stated early on, that full control elements of those alternatives will require it to go to metro facilities, which have limited capacity, which may just undermine the whole approach. Okay, this one is somewhere between red flags and residential. Portland and Metro have worked very successfully to recover residential food scraps, limiting residentially generated food scraps at Metro transfer stations would be a huge problem. Elaborate, please.
Who wrote that?
Mr. Walker?
Build your own transfer station.
Just kidding. We, again, are very appreciative of the work that particularly Fall Section did in the ability to launch a residential program. There are many benefits to residential programming. So to say, oh, it can't go there to your facility, your transfer stations, would obviously impact us, but I think would be misguided in terms of the rest of the region as well.
Okay. Any other comments related to that subject? Where would residents then take, under, similar to what Bruce, I think, was just saying, where would residents then take for their residential material? So then we're relying on private transfer facilities in the region to accept that material and then to get it to those other processors. We've been discussing capacity implications at Metro South and how to accommodate this material. How would that change plans for that facility if all the commercial needed to go there? Yeah, it would, as we noted, it would be a significant element of the planning of that facility then because of the size of that waste stream and the priority.
And so that's where we start to, you know, again, get into
I think in when Paul and Chuck spoke about the Metro South project, it's really about how we prioritize these multiple needs in the region and meet these needs. And we've got to do that. It becomes difficult to do, but it's kind of parceling out and finding what the trade-offs are and then going from there. But that's why these aren't in a vacuum. This is similar, again, just raising the issue of where's the residential going to go?
Is there adequate capacity? I like the idea of residential transfer facility and consolidation of residential yard debris and food waste to keep costs down. Supports alternative three. Could someone elaborate on that?
This goes to the Metro South project, too, where we identified the idea of a separate facility for residential only. And for us, for example, Gresham, yard debris disposal or processing is pretty inexpensive. Once we add food waste to it, the cost really goes up for us. And if there were a dedicated facility that could handle residential yard debris and food waste, where there was enough volume, I'm hoping that that would translate to some reasonable cost for that.
Okay. Regarding alternative five, wastewater operations were capable of processing food through their AD technology are currently outside of the solid waste collection transfer processing system. It would require a significant culture shift. So this is a red flag. Elaboration on that?
You know, it's just that they are, like Clean Water Services in Washington County, they just aren't, you know, they are not familiar with the solid waste system. They think it's mysterious. They don't understand it. it's really far more complicated than what they do. I mean, that's just a perception. I'm not saying it's accurate, but it would require quite a change for them to come into it. It's not a fatal flaw, but it's a whole other level of work.
Don't overlook residential food scraps recovery. It will engage participation and ultimately provide support for business programs. So, elaboration? First
of all, I put it in there, and I think it's something that while we're considering this commercial, and I understand the focus on that material, I really would encourage others to weigh that balance, and you bring it back.
We saw it with recycling. Yeah. One reinforces the other.
But it will also be reducing some of the disposal. The garbage side. So there'd be some savings there. And I'm not saying, I want to be clear, I'm not saying you have to implement our every other week garbage collection program. Yeah. Okay. But what I'm saying is, don't forget residential. It can bring a lot of benefits to this region.
All right, last one. Jurisdictions are looking to expand to residential food waste. Metro needs to work with DEQ to
permit.
Thank you. Yard debris processors to be able to accept residential food waste. Why don't you elaborate a little bit, Dan, and then Wesley, might be an opportunity for you to speak to this too.
Cost, you know, it comes down to cost. If they can handle food, residential yard debris with a little bit of food waste in it, I think, you know, if I kind of have two things out there. One is consolidating with a dedicated metro transfer facility for residential, or helping us on the cost factor with getting the existing yard debris processors to be able to take that additional food waste.
So when Paul did some sampling that was commercial. You did residential sampling? Yeah, residential sampling at Metro, it was 7% food waste or so, plus or minus. And so, you know, Dan's point is kind of, if 100% yard waste can go to X facility, why can't 93% go? Leslie, can you speak a little to how DEQ looks at...
No, but one of your current employees could, who used to work at DEQ. I mean, it makes sense to me, but I'm not very involved in it. I haven't been involved in these discussions, so...
Okay. I might not call out that current employee to speak for DEQ. All right, a lot of really helpful information there. Bruce?
I have a question now that maybe it's tomorrow. It's around the whole flow control issue. What we rely on now includes what, by that broader we of where material food scraps go in the region or from generation in the region. It's not just what flows through metro transfer stations, but also private transfer stations. And so my understanding kind of how you word this or how you frame some of this is that the flow control would come from, you would have greater certainty if you said it shall come to metro transfer stations. But so that's kind of my understanding how it's being framed now. However, my understanding of the current solid waste disposal requirements in the region would say that, that it's 90% shall go to the region's Columbia Ridge landfill, and maybe I'm not phrasing it properly, but could we look at a similar say that you used to go to that?
So I'm Mark Fjordbeck. I'm the senior transaction attorney for the government, and I've represented Metro for 18 years on solid waste issues, including flow control issues. Before that, I was in private practice for 14 years at Lane Powell, Spears Liberski, where I did mostly utility and other rate-related work. Your question really has two or three components, so let me tease them apart and see if I can answer them. The first part of what you said goes to a question of legal risk. And what I've advised the council and said in this arena before is that the least amount of legal risk or least amount of challenge to a flow control regulation of Metro under current law, most notably the 2008-09 Herkimer decision and the more recent appellate decision in Carbone 2, says if you want to have flow control, the least risky way for a government is to bring it to your own facility. That doesn't mean that there are not other ways to do it. It just means that there are other ways of directing waste by governments that have greater risk on them. And so one of the questions for policymakers is to say, what amount of risk are you willing to take? So then let's tease apart the second piece, and it's something that comes up internally, which we've been talking about here recently, is let's not confuse flow control legal authority with flow control contractual implementation. So local governments, governments have the ability to direct waste for particular purposes so long as they don't discriminate against interstate commerce or put an undue burden on interstate commerce. They also have the ability to make certain contractual arrangements, and so long as those contractual arrangements do not unduly favor a local entity out of or over an out-of-state entity, then and the procurement is otherwise properly done, then that procurement is likely to be upheld. So what we refer to as a 90% flow requirement is a contractual promise made between Metro and Waste Management's Arlington facility, in which we have negotiated over the years, but currently says 90% of the region's wet waste directed toward a general purpose landfill will go to a Waste Management landfill, most notably Arlington. So then we move forward to January 1st, 2020, and hopefully January 2nd, because on January 1st I plan to be at a Rose Bowl game with the Oregon Ducks. But so on January 2nd, when I come back into town, what will the arrangement be? Well, that's, you know, that's the answer to the roadmap question, is the roadmap to where? And it's the roadmap to what systems will we have in place, including Jennifer's question, the question of facilities, what contracts will we have in place to deal with flow control? We could very well say, you know, just to throw out some ideas, we could very well say, we want to have multiple contracts with multiple facilities, and we will contract for no less than 35% of some thing called waste that we define in the contract to go to that facility. You know, of course, we're in a different setup than we were in, you know, in the 1980s. Waste Management had to build its facility. Money's got to come from somewhere. The first Carbone decision had not yet been decided. Metro was going to send waste there, so they had something to they could take to their bankers. So that's the second part of your question is don't confuse contractual flow arrangements between a government and a party with the government's ability to control flow, not contractually, but as a matter of implementing public policy. Then I think the third part of your question deals with how we define, you know, sort of each of these groups, whether it's commercial food waste or residential items, and how we tease those apart. And I believe we have the ability to tease those apart for public policy purposes. The question is, can it be made economically viable if we do tease them apart? Or, you know, when this was the, you know, comment that Mr. Blue made, and also the one that Ms. Copang made, you know, as a policy matter, we can tease these apart, but, you know, if there's not much left to manage, then it makes it difficult to finance a facility, you know, unless we do it ourselves. Does that answer all three parts of your question? Did I leave anything out?
I appreciate it because I don't think I framed it as well as you responded there. So, I guess part of what I'm getting at is that yes, there was the public policy need firmly stated by that I think many of us would say we need to recover more of this and material, and Metro Council says none of that material shall go into the landfill. It shall be banned. And would there be a possibility of, rather than just requiring it going through Metro facilities, but is to look at trying to structure contracts similar to, or I don't know, similar, but that would say it would go to a facility that, not transfer facility, but an in-processor.
Right.
Via contract.
Yes, with the ability of the government to accept greater risk. You know, because my job is to say, and as public policy makers, most of your jobs are to evaluate, you know, legal, business, and political risks. So I say to you, the least risky way for you to do this legally is to send it to Metro. But the Metro Council says, we think Bruce Walker has a great idea. Why don't we, you know, spread some of this around and, you know, have a contract with this facility and have a contract with another one? To which I respond that may be legally permissible. I believe I can construct it in a way that will certainly be arguably legal and under both Oregon and federal law, as long as my client is willing to accept greater risk. And the risk is the risk of legal challenge. And sometimes that risk is apparent. There are some projects in the region right now that are subject to legal challenge that have emanated from this room. So sometimes the client is willing to accept risk. And so, yes, you know, if the policy rationale is we need this to go to these particular facilities and there are other strings attached, then it could be done. But there's likely to be a loser because when there's a winner, the facility that gets some portion of this because the public facilities don't have capacity, and there's a competition for that, then there's likely to be the one party that will say Metro did an excellent job in selecting us, and there's likely to be three or four parties who are not so sure. So I think it can be done. I think it entails greater legal risk.
Thank you, Marvin.
You're welcome.
Very helpful.
Sure.
Jennifer's going to wrap up with some next steps, but yes, before that, any other questions, comments, observations, Teresa?
Well, the question that came to my mind as Marvin was speaking that I know is going to get asked to me eventually. So I'm going to have to answer it today, but maybe it's kind of a homework thing. And that is, it's kind of, I don't know if it's a flow control question or interpretation, but why would we consider flow controlling food as a source separated item when we don't flow control other things that we want to recover?
Mm-hmm.
I know someone's going to ask me that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you the short answer, which is really why this project exists, which is unlike with other recyclables, this system has not developed at the pace and consistency in terms of capacity. We allowed the private sector system, take the word allowed, the private sector system for handling curbside recyclables developed in such a way that we did not see a need for that kind of action. Whereas I think our kind of an assumption or a starting point for this project is 15 years in with food waste, we thought we'd be a little further, and we're feeling like we need to look at some different ways of getting there. It's one person's opinion. All right. Jennifer, can you close us out?
Sure. So the next steps are that we're going to continue to refine these alternatives based a lot on your input. And like I said, we're at the very early stages. There's a lot of detail to be gone through. We're going to apply the criteria that we've developed that I showed you early on, which is much like the roadmap public benefits. We have to complete the remaining analysis steps, and we may end up returning to SWAC depending on the next phase of work, if the alternatives end up substantially different than the ones you saw today, if we feel like we need to come back and say, hey, we need your input on these because they look a lot different, or we have a new one that we haven't vetted with you. So stay tuned. That would probably happen in August if we were to come back, but I'll look to Matt for scheduling.
And as many of you noted, there's a lot of work between now and the end. You know, just to reiterate what I think Jennifer said at the beginning of this meeting and last meeting, you know, that we're in the phase of the work where we want to create some alternatives to test with our council and get their feedback on whether they want us to go any further in exploring any of them or which ones, in which case many of the things that you guys brought up are then what we'd have to dive into.
And we will we'll be discussing it with council in October. So we do have 3 months to really dig into this more.
Okay, final thoughts from SWAC members on this subject? Bruce?
So this is maybe one, it's a comment, but also kind of poses a question. It's the whole issue about approximate, and I'm not sure the best way to frame it, but right now, where food scraps are going, both commercially and residential, down the valley, I'm referring to JC and PRC's facilities, those are closer than our existing transport for landfill.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to me, that's positive. The other issue about siting, What are we trying to cite? If we're looking at a residential facility that would take lots of yard debris, that could be challenging. If it's an AV facility, maybe that's not as challenging because of the size and perceived odor-related issues that may come up. And I mean, Columbia Biogas, that got permitted and has siting. It doesn't, you know, it's not being built, and there's other issues
Yeah. Fine with that then. Scott?
A couple comments. Kind of, what is it to the degree possible? I understand why we're considering residential and commercial separately now because of our maybe our current system, and in some ways how that could be just transformed or just carried forward. But if there's a way to kind of relink them, I think you answer some of your own questions, like how would we deal with the disposal ban, in that is it large generators only or all food waste generating businesses? Because in my dream world, without doing any homework or planning on the consulting part, collection is a whole lot easier in a disposal ban system if the residential food scrap yard waste system can be potentially collected by the same trucks that small generated commercial would be collected by. And so that if they can be brought back together rather than continue to be divergent, I think that's really worth considering. And although I understand how we got to where we are on that.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
So and then a second kind of related, this maybe kind of gets back to some of Amy's question and back to, or Amy's comment on the wet dry, and it gets into the disposal ban. But this has more to do with that. I mean, in a disposal ban, what exactly might be requiring or banned from disposal? And in the sense that now we're moving, evolving the system to a food-only collection system, but there are all those materials that can come with food that are currently out of lab but won't be in the future. That I think will get more difficult in a food, you know, disposal ban scenario, because then what you do in some of the, where do you draw the line about what is banned and what is not banned when it's absolutely food only and not other compostable papers and cardboard type materials? It's just more complex. And if there's a processing scenario that would allow us to loosen the food only at some point in the future, it may be easier to have a ban and define what's in the ban.
Okay.
I may not have been very clear with that.
Okay. Thank you. All right, let's go to public comment now. Anybody who's interested in speaking, just raise your hand. I'll call one by one, have you come up to the table. Doug, can you come up to the table, please? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Doug Drennan with Jared Miller Associates. Really, it's kind of a tagline of what was just made by Scott and somewhat on Amy. And my company, of course, has been involved with doing anaerobic digestion. But in looking at food scraps as an isolated situation is one alternative. And maybe it's part of your grander roadmap. But I guess to kind of feed on to that comment is use the word mixed organics, because the technology is already there to process and separate mixed organics, whether it be commercial or residential. It's being applied, you know, across the country. And the problem with doing that is if you don't have a process at the end. So if your whole food scrap is considering AD or some technology, then I think your opportunity to expand to mixed organics is greater. And carrying it as far as Amy to wet dry, that's certainly another alternative, but you really don't even have to go to that length to recover that. There are technologies there. So,
and Doug, just to make sure everybody understands, when you say mixed organics, that includes?
That would include the thing Scott brought up.
Okay.
You know, right now, I would say probably in Portland and other areas where they have strong curbside programs, there's already aggressive recycling of commercial waste stream, meaning that the commercial waste stream that's being recovered or remaining is usually high in content with mixed waste. Now, having worked on the Marion County solid waste plan for several years, where we got to the point of where 60%, the next level was mixed organics. Even and so, a subset of that is food scraps. But what we looked at was the reality is there's you can recover the mixed organics, which includes the paper, and particularly if you're considering technology. Now, some of that can be composted, but if you look at the San Jose digester, it's taking mixed organics, and their energy production is through the roof. I mean, it's much higher than they expected. So I don't know how that fits into this study and a broader horizon, but the technology and the material recovery facility is there to do that. So,
thanks, Tom. Others?
Okay. Thank you for a very good and very helpful discussion. Really, really appreciate it. So looking ahead, next month's meeting is still going to be on the roadmap theme, and it's going to focus on the transfer system configuration project. Doug Anderson will lead that discussion. This will be a part one discussion, probably focusing mostly on context and introduction to that project, which is really looking at, you know, what form should the public-private transfer system take to maximize those six public benefits. It's going to be a really interesting discussion in my mind. And then I wanted to let you know that we've added an item to the September meeting. It will really be the September meeting that you haven't seen before. And that's going to be a meeting that's going to focus on getting your input on DEQ's draft recovery goals for our region. So as many of you know, DEQ is looking to take a legislative package forward in 2015 that addresses a number of things related to its materials management plan. Included among those are new goals and measures, statewide and wasteshed specific. They're gathering stakeholder input, so it's an opportunity for them to get stakeholder input. But specific to your role in SWAC, it's an opportunity for us to get your input that we can then share with our council as our council develops its legislative priorities package for next year. So Leslie and David Alloway and perhaps others will be here to talk to us in September about that. So a couple really interesting next meetings. Any final comments before we adjourn? Thank you. We're adjourned.